All right. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call us back to order as the Board of Supervisors this morning. If everybody would take their seat, please.
Perfect, Brent.
Okay. The next item on the agenda for the Board of Supervisors this morning is public comment period number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. I know many of you have turned in a slip. We want to speak during the public hearing on one or two or more topics. If there's anybody that has anything else outside of that that they'd like to speak to, this would be the time. I'm not seeing anybody moving towards the mic. Consideration of minutes from 3:29.
Move approval.
Second. Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Consideration of personnel actions. We don't have any. Consideration of claims.
Move approval. I like the totals.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the claims. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Two? Aye. Consent agenda. Gentlemen, add utility permits 1655 and 56.
Move approval with no change.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Is there anything additional? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Two? Aye. That takes us to public hearing items. First, consideration of resolution 1652, expressing intent to enter into a loan agreement in an amount not to exceed $2,450,000 for the purpose of refunding the general obligations county road improvement bonds from 2008 and 2009. Lucy Martin.
Hi, Lucy.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
It's a morning, right?
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Before you have a resolution, very much to discuss the refinancing of the bonds. I have Travis Squires here from Edgar Jaffray, who's helping us with the refinancing, and he'll come back with two additional items later on the agenda. Pretty straightforward. If you have any questions for us.
Remind me how much we're going to save the people of Scoring County by refinancing this?
I think about $83,000 is roughly.
Yep. And the original total bond in 2008-2009 was what?
Lisa's here, right?
So,
$9 million?
Right at $9 million.
Right at $9 million, and so we're going to refinance the last 2.4 and save $83,000.
Yep, that's the current estimate right now.
It's not huge, but every dollar counts. Yeah.
It's huge.
Any other questions? Not, I'll open the public hearing. Anybody wants to speak to this, this would be the time. Not seeing anybody move to the mic, I'll turn to the board.
Move approval of resolution 1652.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Approve resolution 1652. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Two? Aye. That's been approved. Thank you, Lucy. Next public hearing item, consideration to vacate and close portions of 303rd Street and 720th Avenue in Story County, Darren Moon, County Engineer. Morning, Darren.
Good morning.
Eric?
I guess first I want to be clear, these two are not related, so let's kind of separate them.
Let's do 720 first, that's over by Colo.
Sure.
Okay. Shelly, can you put the light there a little bit just so I can see it a little bit better? Thank you.
Okay, yes, the first one is 720th Avenue. Just a couple code sections here. The board does have the power to vacate roads, specifically 354.23. You can vacate any road which is deemed to be no benefit to the public anymore. The city or county may vacate by resolution following a public hearing. We take no action today because it gives them a chance all day today to submit claim damages. So you will take no action today. Um, when hearings open, you take comments from anybody that lives, that received notice, and we sent notices out to everybody adjacent to the roadway, the DOT and utilities. If the vacation landlocks property, this probably won't be the case here, but just so you're aware, if it landlocks the property, in lieu of paying damages, the board can purchase that property or condemn it and then sell it at an attainable price, but that's really not an option for either one of these. So the next step, the board may pass a resolution at next week's board meeting to vacate the road, and then we put a clause in there subject to the right of utilities to continue using their existing easement. And any damage terminations can be appealed to the district court within 20 days. This 720th came from a landowner request, George Haywood, excuse me, and he had all the property owners along the road sign at the bottom there. So that's why this process was initiated. The board passed resolution to set today as the hearing date, and we sent the required copies of the notice of hearing to landowners, utilities, and the DOT by certified mail, and we also published in the newspapers. Here's the location, that yellow right over here. That's the location of the 1 mile. It's actually 2 miles of level B road right now, but we're just looking at the south 1 mile to vacate at this point. I think there had been some change in property owners, so there's no longer anybody being landlocked. This is the mile stretch road right here. This is all owned by one person, and then one owns here and one owns here, so nobody will be landlocked by doing this. And I think an added bonus, I don't think there's any utilities on the road, which is rare. That's a copy of the notice that was sent out. Pertain to this particular one, but depending on the comments we get from the hearing, I would recommend that the board proceed with vacating the stretch of road at the next week's board meeting. Go ahead and open the public hearing for this now.
Okay. Is there anybody who wants to speak specifically to 720th Avenue? I thought there was one gentleman that came in. Maybe not. Mark Edwards? Okay. Anybody else that has any comments on this particular item on 720th Avenue? If not, I'll close the hearing.
I'll move that we proceed with April 12th as the date for the board to consider vacation of 720th.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to continue this to April 12th with a resolution to vacate this portion of the road. Any additional comments? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Next, discussion and consideration of Resolution 16. Oh, no, wait a minute. Isn't there another?
Yes.
Let's go back. Right. Let's go back and talk about 303rd Lane.
This one is not so straightforward. I'll go into some of the details. I'll skip the legal presentation.
Same thing, Chef.
Here's the location.
Thank you.
303rd Lane, again, it's already a level B classified road. It's a dirt road right now, no rock on it. It was dead-ended when the interstate came through. Comes off of 570th Avenue. There's a picture on 570th Avenue looking west towards the interstate in the background. You can see the signage for the level B minimum maintenance road and dead-end sign. As you're well aware, we've had a few discussions on this at board meetings in the past. This property right here was parceled off for CITGO for the substation, which is being constructed for the past month or so. They're having difficulties getting in and out on the dirt road, understandably, in the spring. Our level B ordinance does not allow us to rock this road or allow them to put rock on the road and upgrade it to a level A. So this is owned by CITGO, and they have an easement that comes up to 303rd. I should also point out 303rd Lane or Street. The DOT's inventory shows it as street. We show it as lane. If we do vacate it in the final, we might put both just to make sure we're covering it, but this is the only 303rd in the whole county. So this parcel here was purchased by Dakota Access. This is the separate property owner, and then all this is owned by a separate property owner, too. So this would landlock Dakota Access if you were to vacate this stretch of roadway. So from this point on, they would need easements from both property owners to get legal access back to that property. Our intention was if we vacate this road, then the property owners can work together and upgrade the road as they see fit. But the county would then be completely out of maintenance, and that would have no legal responsibility for the roadway. I believe that covers everything. Go ahead and open up the hearing.
Question more or less to you before we open the public hearing. So, understanding the property owners and the concept of easement, if it's vacated, that means that they work out some type of an agreement as far as who's responsible for maintaining and upgrading the road as they see fit. What if there's a disagreement between the property owners and one of the other entities that is seeking to utilize this area, such as the Dakota Access or the utility, whatever you'll say that?
Well, that's where we're hoping the hearing, we would get property owners to show up and we'd get an indication if there'd be willingness to cooperate. If there is not, we'll have to probably talk to the county attorney on whether you really have the legal authority to vacate if you landlock somebody. I think you still do. Might have to pay damages to them, but we'd have to dig into that a little deeper.
So the idea is that it's a level B road now. It's not really being maintained by the county.
Correct.
And so if it was vacated with the understanding that there's a desire to turn this over for individuals to upgrade it as they see fit, just philosophically, why would I not want to see the road somewhat improved if I'm going to have to use it as access at various times of the year, if maybe I'm not going to have to bear the cost of it?
The other property owners you're referring to? Not us? Okay. Yeah, that's strictly up to the private property.
Right, but I mean, that's just a philosophical question that I would just wanted to bring this.
Okay. I would say let's open the hearing and see if there's public comment, and then we can discuss that part a little bit further before we do it.
I would hope someone make a comment to that question during the public hearing.
With that, I will open the public hearing, and I've got some slips here in front of me. Jack Kroger.
Jack. I can never see Jack without thinking of entrepreneur.
Say
again. I can never see you without thinking of entrepreneur. That's still one of my favorite coined words that you came up with.
I have many coined words. You'd think I'd be rich by now with all the coined words I have. But money is number two on my list, and it means nothing. Jack Kroger, am I in the right place? Jack Kroger, 1009 16th Street, Ames. Contrary to public opinion, last night's buzzer-busting basketball hoopla is not relevant. Only Earth, our only home, is relevant. Every moment of every day and every night, because without Earth, we are not here. Period. No excuses. Attorney Holmes quoted the law, all of which was written and passed by the powers that be, for the powers that be, including Dakota Access, not by the people, like you and me, for the people, like you and me. Denying that statement does not make it go away any more than denying climate change makes it go away. Still here. as a trained geologist and an awful lot of years in climatology and meteorology, folks, you ain't seen nothing yet. All those things you've been seeing, nothing. Nationwide, too often, using the law, too many of our selected officials do not speak for Earth and thus for the people, the residents that Earth sustains. I got to go to my other sheet. Oh boy, what a mess. But I'm going to ask, Wayne, I appreciated your comments earlier, very much appreciated. I understand. I do truly understand. So thank you for your comments. And so I would ask regarding this little piece of land, this unused piece of territory, this unused piece of earth. So everything the three of you can do, either individually or as a trio, to throw a giant monkey wrench into the machinery of civilization and Kelsey Warren's fiasco is deeply appreciated. I know you can't do it. I understand. But anything you can do to toss that monkey wrench is appreciated.
Thank you, Jack. I lost my pile. Heather Penny. Is Heather still here? Come on up. If you want, you don't have to. You going to pass? Okay, and then Dave Lohman, is Dave still here?
I think I wait.
You're going to wait? Okay, is there anybody else that would like to speak? Linda, come on up.
Thank you. Dakota Access bought this land without any consideration of the fact that they were not going to be able to get their construction equipment through it. Then they came and asked the county supervisors to put gravel in it, and you can't do that. So now they want this lane to maintain it. This is county property, I understand. I just hope that the taxpayers don't have to bear any burden of Dakota Access's lack of planning in this matter. That's all.
Thank you. Darren, would you talk to that just a little bit about who actually owns that portion of ground?
This one here?
Well,
who owns the roadway?
The roadway itself.
The roadway itself.
The roadway itself is by easement. The Dakota County has easement for the roadway.
So the property owners already own the ground.
They own it.
We just have an easement for the road.
We just have an easement for the roadway.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we're not getting
this isn't county-owned property. And just for Linda, we can put gravel down on this road. We simply have to take it from a level B to a level A road, and then the county would be responsible for maintaining it. And that, in fact, if Dakota Access has not asked us to do that, CIPCO has asked us to do that. And we said, absolutely not. We're not spending any county dollars. Exactly what you said. I mean, poor planning on somebody's part does not necessitate spending county dollars on our part. And so the next lot, what we can't do is we can't restrict access to a piece of private property. We can't make them landlocked with no access to their property. And so since we're not willing to spend, or at least have not indicated any willingness to spend any county dollars to maintain what is basically a driveway for CIPCO and ultimately Dakota Access if they build the pump station back there, the next logical step is let's just vacate our easement, and then it becomes the private property owner's responsibility to handle it.
What if you did nothing?
Yeah, I think that, and Stephen's the right guy to address this. My concern with doing nothing is, so now you're putting the Board of Supervisors in a position where we restrict access based on our feelings toward the property owner. That is a dangerous can of worms to open. I don't know that it would pass legal muster.
You're not restricting access. You're just not giving it to them, and you're not maintaining it. I live on a mud road. I don't have the county putting gravel down on my road.
for vacating it for me. So
but I don't think it was ever a county road. We don't have any, we do not have any residences on a non-maintained road. We don't have any structures, maintained structures, other than a farm outbuilding that they access with agricultural equipment. This is an issue. I mean, this road, I think, is problematic if it stays the way it is.
It's hazardous because of what is taking place with you. I don't know what...
Speak on the mic, Stevens. Great show that we
Shelley's
have
one.
Corbett. Thank you.
I'm not sure where you live. Where do you live?
1715 GW Carter. Gilbert.
The lady next to her.
No, the other, the lady next to her.
She says she lives on a class B.
I don't live in this area.
Okay. Well, because of the activity that's taking place there, and we do have an easement, we have a roadway easement. It's a county road, only it's not a maintained road. All right, so now there's truck traffic. They're bringing in equipment. There is all kinds of activity on the road. It's not in the kind of condition to take that kind of traffic at that road. That can cause problems. That can cause accidents. That can cause liability for the county. That's something that we want to avoid.
Anybody else would like to speak about this? Yes, sir. Come up to the microphone, please. And then identify yourself for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and board members. My name is Brett Dublinski, Fredrickson and Byron Law Firm at 505 East Grand in Des Moines, representing Dakota Access. And I appreciate the opportunity this morning. My stance, and I will admit that some of you are familiar with me. I've met some of you on some other work I've been doing for Dakota Access. I'm jumping into this issue a little late. My understanding is that there may be some miscommunication, some misunderstanding among the various stakeholders, and hopefully by jumping in late I won't make that any worse. Let me try and make it a little better. I think the essential concern has been identified of the potential landlocking, either functionally or legally, of the back property there. And I think, starting where I think everyone does agree, the status quo probably isn't what anybody wants. There are some maintenance issues, obviously, for the county and the condition of the road. It's not suitable for the projects that CIPCO or Dakota Access are working on at the moment. I think a couple of different alternatives have been discussed and perhaps talking past each other. And I think the first thing I would say is that to the extent CIPCO is saying that their preference would be that the county keep the road and simply do the maintenance on it, obviously that would be our preference, and we think that, you know, the tax benefits of those two large projects would justify it. Now, having said that, I completely understand the county's position that, you know, that's not what you're looking to do. The second option, which I have an understanding about but I haven't heard mentioned today, is that the county and CIPCO are discussing or have entered an agreement that would provide a very limited waiver that would actually allow the private entities to provide improvements to the surface of the road that would then make that more usable. And presumably that only comes into play if the county doesn't vacate, because otherwise those rules about improvements aren't applicable anyway. The third option, obviously, is to vacate the road. And the concern there is that if there is a difficulty in reaching agreement, you may have a period of time that is landlocked, number one. We think the Iowa law pretty clearly disfavors landlocking of property. Second is the issue of, in general, when those situations, if they can't be easily resolved, they end up in court, right? You end up having a court having to establish the easement by prescription or the easement by necessity. I don't think that's where anybody wants to end up. And obviously on projects this size, the damages potentially are substantial. You've got these, you know, competing interests that may or may not be able to be worked out. And I guess our suggestion, and I sort of list those in the order of our preference, I think we would be, from what I'm aware of the discussed arrangement with CIPCO, Dakota Access would be willing conceptually, we haven't looked at the exact language, to do something similar. And I understand that the terms of that also address some of the county attorney's concerns about liability. So I guess, one, I want to just sort of address that's sort of our view of where we are, sort of our preference of how we solve it. Understanding that there have been a variety of different views on how to solve it, what people want, what people don't want, there may have been some miscommunication on some of those. What we would ask, if there's any lack of clarity or any concern, and we think that there is that the board set this aside for a small amount of time to give the parties an opportunity and the stakeholders an opportunity to try and discuss what the options are and work it out. At the very least, we would ask that if the county wants to go ahead and vacate, that we see if we can reach an agreement with the other landowners first, right? So we're not sort of jumping off without a plan to get us there. But, you know, if there's something along the lines of the CIPCO agreement that we can look at, we can sort of talk about among the stakeholders and with the county, what the best way to resolve a problem that I think all of us acknowledge is a problem is that, you know, we think that taking a little bit of time to do that makes some sense, hopefully avoids some larger disputes down the road.
Well, Brett, I appreciate you being here, and I heard you lay out three options, and I agree that there's three options. I just don't agree what the three options are. I don't think so that there's a later on our agenda, depending on I think where we move from here, there's a proposed agreement from CIPCO that would allow CIPCO to put to basically start to maintain the road while we move through the process of vacating the ground. I don't believe that, as I'll speak for me, if we're not moving toward finalizing vacating the easement, then I don't have any interest in allowing anything to be done to that road, because I think we put ourselves in legal jeopardy. Exactly. The second we allow a level B road to be improved, then the county could be liable for maintaining that road in perpetuity. And just living proof that sitting in these three chairs, you get lots of opportunities to make everybody mad at you. So we made the ICCI folks mad at us already this morning. Now we'll make Dakota Access mad at us. I see three options. I see we could increase the road to a level A and the county could pay to improve it and spend dollars out there. I have zero interest in that, none. Two, we can vacate the road, which requires an agreement among the property owners to figure out how access is going to be granted and how it's going to be maintained. Or three, we can leave it as is, and good luck to Dakota Access. I mean, that goes to what Jack wants us to do, make it as tough as possible on everybody to do what they're supposed to do. Those are the three options that I see before us, because for me, this later on proposed agreement with CIPCO, if we take the stance of, well, we need to go into a holding pattern while everything works out, then I'm not going to have any interest at all in approving, and Darren, you help me if I'm missing this, I'm not going to have any interest at all in approving kind of a Band-Aid approach that I think puts the county at liability if we're not going to vacate the ground. If we vacate the ground, I view it as a driveway. Then CIPCO and Dakota Access, you guys make the agreements with the other landowners, however you make the agreements with the other landowners, and it becomes a private drive, in essence, for you to get back there. You maintain it however you see fit. Anything short of that, I'm going to fall on the leave it as is, and you're going to have trucks up to their axles in mud is what's going to happen.
And I don't think that we necessarily disagree on what the three options are. I mean, what I hear you saying, and if I misstate it, please correct me, is that the CIPCO agreement still contemplates that you're moving towards vacating, but it allows sort of for this bridge period of time, if you will, CIPCO sort of a waiver to immediately start maintaining that, which normally, if it's a county road, the private party would not be able to do. And I think we would be willing, you know, I understand that the county is not in the cards to upgrade this to level A. So the CIPCO agreement as a bridge to make the road usable while we continue to move forward in the process, I think is a reasonable solution in that it does exactly what I was referring to, which is it buys time to work out the deal with the other landowners.
That's where you and I have a disconnect.
Okay, that's where
that's where you and I have a disconnect. So the agreement, as I read it with CIPCO, is vacation of the easement is imminent, and we want to allow CIPCO to go ahead and continue. So like what we just did with 720, we're coming back
on April 12th, and we're vacating the road, unless something major happens between now and April 12th, it is absolutely the Board of Supervisors' intention to vacate 720. What I'm hearing now is that Dakota Access and CIFCO needs more time. We need some more time to work through the process. That is not imminent to me. That is, we need some more time to work through the process, and what I'm telling you is, and I'm speaking just for me here, Brett, I'm willing to consider an agreement to allow the private parties to improve the road if vacation is imminent, not if we're working through the process to get to vacation. That's different to me.
Just to be clear, I am not speaking for CIFCO.
Absolutely.
And I have not had a chance to study that agreement, so I don't know exactly what it says. My assumption on what it says is based on the fact that if it were vacated, the rules restricting private parties from maintaining wouldn't apply anyway, which is why my assumption was, having heard the terms, that if we're allowing CIFCO to do private upgrades, that the county, that contemplates that the county wouldn't have vacated yet simply because the rule prohibiting that wouldn't be effective, as I understand it, and I certainly defer to the county attorney on that. And I think, as long as we do not end up landlocked, and I think the CIFCO agreement is directed at avoiding that, I think we would be fine with that.
Right, and so what you missed in all this is, was it a week ago or 2 weeks ago that you had CIFCO here?
Yes.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago. What we conveyed to CIFCO at that point is, if there's an agreement for this ground to be vacated, then we don't want CIFCO to get caught kind of between while we run through the process of having this public hearing and then ultimately moving toward vacation, and that's where the potential for that agreement to allow some improvements in the interim to happen. What I'm hearing now, Brett, is that that's not the point that we're at right now. We do not have the agreements at this point for how access is going to be. I believe that rests solely with the four private property owners that Darren mentioned, and until we have that, I'm not going to be interested in vacating the ground, and I'm equally not going to be interested in any improvements on that road. Now, I'm one vote out of three, but I mean, time is of the essence. If CIFCO is really interested in continuing what work they're doing, and they need to improve that road or that driveway in order to continue that work, then it's in everybody's best interest to go ahead and get something figured out so that we can be in the process to vacate the road.
Right, and my only, and again, I said I jumped in the middle. I was not here for that meeting. I don't know what steps CIFCO may have taken with regard to the other surrounding property owners. I have a, and as I think all of you have expressed, ideally it's in everyone's interest to work these things out collectively. Unfortunately, I think we all know that it doesn't always work that smoothly. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it won't. My concern that is, if it doesn't, then we end up with a much bigger dispute than what we have today. And that, the two things we're trying to avoid is being landlocked and having a bigger dispute than,
sure,
than we have.
We can maintain the not landlocked as is. You just don't have a road that's passable.
That's passable. And so you've got heavy equipment coming down when it's muddy or raining and stuff, making the road impassable not only for that equipment, but for some of the landowners who are trying to, get to and from. And so the question really becomes, if you do nothing and you have situations like this, then nothing happens when the road is impassable. Now, is that in CIFCO's best interest, or is it in their best interest to try to move forward with a vacation of the road and then working out an agreement with the other landowners about how it's going to be maintained? To me, it appears to be a much more feasible alternative, because we made it very clear, as Supervisor Sanders said, when they came to us before, expecting us to pay for the upgrade. Say, wait a minute, you entered into purchasing this area and never came to the county, never had a discussion about, the road and what potential would be, and now you want us to pay to convert it to a level A? No, that's not going to happen. So, I mean, that was made very clear at the start. And so the discussion, they do There's one option was to consider the vacation. So what have they done between now and then? That's not my concern.
Yeah. No, and I understand that the county isn't interested in moving it to a level A, and I think the private maintenance of it actually, you know, involves the companies paying for that maintenance. And I think under the CIPCO agreement, which we're willing to do something similar, is exactly how that plays out. My concern, just because I've seen this happen in a variety of situations around the state, is that all it takes is one landowner who wants to use it as an opportunity to say, you know, in a normal situation, we would work all this out, but we have an opportunity to, you know, to use the, you know, the terms were used a minute ago to sort of throw a wrench in, right? And that's all, you know, and so we are concerned about the situation where...
It's all a legal process if they still determine to do that.
And that's fine. I'm just saying, you know, trying to work it out first and see if that can happen would be one way to try and avoid this becoming a larger dispute. And that's...
I completely agree with that. Yeah. Just the catch-22 is, I don't believe that we're going to take any action as a board to vacate this road until and unless there's agreement from all the landowners on how access is going to be granted. And until we do that, I'm not going to be willing to vote for anything that improves that road at all, because I think it puts us at jeopardy.
Although I think,
Gary, have you heard anything from the landowners on the north?
Ed and I have talked to the one on the south. He lives in Cedar Rapids, and he was open to discussing things for an easement. I've tried calling Parker and Mark, and he just had to return my calls. But do not know.
Well, so tell me this. Let's say that the landowner on the north decides that they have no interest in this. If the landowner on the south is agreeable, don't they just have to stay on his property? So the property line is going to go to the center of the road, right? So the Cedar Rapids person is going to own to the center of the road. Right. Person on the north is going to own the north side of the road, right, if we vacate it. So then it becomes a negotiation, as I see it, between CIPCO and Dakota Access and the south property owner to build an adequate driveway that stays entirely within the property along the south if the one on the north doesn't want to work with it.
That's a possibility.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not suggesting that, you know, we have any reason to believe that it can't be worked out.
Okay.
Since I didn't have the benefit of the CIPCO debate, I want to come in and sort of lay out my understanding of where things were, and I appreciate your clarification on that understanding.
So what I'm going to suggest, just to move us to the end of this thing, is I'm going to suggest that we don't schedule any further action on this. That means that there's no improvement at all. I mean, I guess we consider that later in our agenda, but that's tipping my hand where I'm going to come down. Until such time as we have something from the four property owners or from enough of the property owners that we don't restrict access to the back parcel, and then we put it back on our agenda to consider vacation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then the ball's in you guys' court. You guys figure it out.
Okay. We can do that.
Anybody else that would like to?
Susan.
You got to come to the mic so you can hear me.
Tell me, how long have you been in the boot?
8 weeks. Cast for two. Susan Peach, point of inquiry. I'm confused from what something was said. Is this a county road?
This is a county road. We have
county
an
road.
Easement for this county road.
So we taxpayers own this road?
No.
I have easement for it.
Thank you. That's what I needed to know.
And so what we're talking about, Susie, is vacating our easement, so now it just reverts back to the private landowners. Anybody else?
Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'll turn to the board.
I'm suggesting that we take no action until we get have more information. Darren, will count on you to continue to reach out to the private property owners. And if we don't get anything, it just maintains the status quo. I would suggest you need to keep an eye on that property and make sure we don't get a mysterious load of rock or something out there.
Correct. So, if that may just bring up full speed, there's a 160,000 pound transformer that's waiting to get in there. That's not our problem. I understand. We have to permit the heavy load. So even the crane that has to go out there needs a permit for a heavy load to go out there, and we put it in the permit that they're responsible for any road damage, so they will not travel out there. So CIFCO's trying to get the crane to come out, but they're refusing to come out at this point because they don't want to be responsible for road damages.
Sure.
But I think that transformer's sitting in the bay now wanting to get out there. But
I'm sure it is, and I feel for them, but it is what it is.
Well, it comes back to the conversation we had with CIFCO. This, you're on the back end of this conversation, not the front end, and I'm not going to answer. So.
Okay. Well, I will second that motion that we take no action at this time until an agreement can be worked out.
Okay. I don't know that we need a vote not to take any action, but we'll just...
No, we already handled 7.8. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we're going to come forward next week on 7.8.
Correct. This is just with 303rd. Okay, Aaron, any other questions for us?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, additional items.
Review proposal from private placement process on the refinancing. Travis Squires again.
No, we got the...
No, you got a discussion.
Sorry, Travis.
Another one.
I'm not keeping track today. Discussion and consideration of Resolution 1648, Ames Urban Fringe Map Amendment. East Industrial Area, Jerry Moore and Charlie Kuster from the City of Ames.
Jerry, what's going on this morning? Still morning.
Yes, still is.
We may not be in morning when you guys are done, but we're in morning right now.
Let's wait just a couple minutes, guys, and anybody that doesn't want to sit for this, go ahead and go.
I think the solution we didn't talk about was an on-off ramp off the interstate.
Mr. Chair, can we have a two-minute recess?
Yes, let's take a two-minute recess.
All right.
Hold on.
Okay. I'll go ahead and call us back to order. Again, we're discussing Resolution 1648, the Ames Urban Fringe Map Amendment.
Those of you who weren't here for the oil pipeline or the vacation roads, I hope you had fun listening to all that. Now,
democratic process.
It is the democratic process at work.
Good morning. We're ready?
Okay.
Again, this is an amendment to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, the East Industrial Area. The presentation that we're giving to you this afternoon or this morning is the same presentation that we gave to the Planning and Zoning Commission, Story County, in March. The request to action is from the City of Ames. We're requesting an amendment to the future land use classes and framework maps. There's actually two maps. The boundaries of this area include, to the west is I-35, to the far east is 590th Avenue, from the north it's 210th Street, and it extends to the south about a half mile south of U.S. Highway 30. Current land use designations are agriculture and farm service, planned industrial, and agriculture long-term industrial reserve. Proposed land use would be expansion of the planned industrial area and expansion of the agriculture long-term industrial reserve. Current zoning, for the most part, most of this land is A1 agriculture. There are some pockets of A2 agribusiness, as well as commercial, light industrial, and then a small little pocket of R2 residential district. The proposed change would encompass approximately a little over 3 square miles of a 7.22 square mile area. So this is the aerial from that area. It's a 2013 aerial. It also has the current zoning district designations. To the west, you see the red line that represents the eastern corporate limits of the City of Ames. To the right side of the screen is the corporate limits for the City of Nevada. Inside the City of Nevada, the western edge, that area is zoned general industrial district. If you go back over to Ames, the area south of where the railroad right-of-way is, and I have a laser pointer and I'll use that, just south of that railroad right-of-way. East of the freeway is planned industrial. A little further to the west would be general industrial zoning. And then again, in the unincorporated area, you're primarily looking at agricultural zoning, A1 district. The red areas represent the commercial, light industrial. Green is the A2 agribusiness. And then there's a small little pocket southeast of the interchange that is R2 residential. So from a land use perspective, much of the land is agriculture in nature, large parcels under single ownership for the most part. There are some scattered residences. Most of those residences are located along the Lincoln Highway corridor. And then to the south along US 30, there's a couple of churches. The DOT has their maintenance facility. And then, of course, there's scattered residences throughout. So to the left is the current Ames Urban Fringe map. That's the map that is in existence today. The Ames Urban Fringe plan was adopted in 2006, and this is the current situation. So,
and that's as it was, Charlie, in 2006, right? We haven't made any amendments in this area since 2006. So the view on the left is when the Ames Urban Fringe plan was originally put in place, much of this was already industrial reserve.
That's correct. Right. Yep. So east of the freeway, you have the planned industrial. That's the lavender or purple color. To the south of the railroad right-of-way, that's agriculture, long-term industrial reserve, and that's the crosshatch area that extends all the way south of U.S. Highway 30. And then the green is the agriculture and farm service designation. To the right is the map of what was proposed. We were before you in February to give you a heads up about the requested change. And this shows the proposed extension of the planned industrial area south of the existing planned industrial. It also shows the agricultural long-term industrial reserve to be extended to the east to 590th Avenue, and then to the south, an extension to the southeast, and again up to 590th Avenue. This is what is before you today for action. It's the same thing, except for if you look at the far east side of what is being proposed for planned industrial, we're showing instead area that encompasses, I think, about 120 acres, which would be agriculture long-term industrial reserve. So that's the only change. So this would be actually less of an area than what was before.
So they've taken some, from the last time we saw the map, they've taken some out of planned industrial and suggested it be industrial reserve.
Correct. And then the other issue is the change in the urban fringe boundary. The boundary did follow the eastern limit of what was the farm service area. And again, that's a 2-mile extension limit from the current corporate limits. And with the planning that has gone on with the city of Ames, with the city of Nevada, it was determined that 590th made the most sense.
Don't be pointing at the screen.
Oh, sorry. So that's why you see that change. Before, it did follow the contour of that farm service area, which you can see in this map a little better.
So the map you're showing me now on the right assumes that the annexation that I think is in process actually occurs, and that's where the new 2-mile boundary will be.
The 2-mile boundary is set by the urban fringe plan, and because of that fringe plan, it does not automatically extend when the city annexes. Okay. It does not go another 2 miles out from any...
But that's what we're trying to recognize here.
Actually, what we're trying to recognize here is that our current 2-mile fringe extends into the city of Nevada and in and across 590th, which we can talk a little bit about the agreement that we have with Nevada, essentially the demarcation line that they will go no further west from 590th.
And you'll go no further east.
We'll go no further east.
Okay. And is that in perpetuity north-south, or does that have a specific...
It essentially, well, I think for ease of the agreement, we wrote it from the whole length of it.
Okay. So that's the map that's before you. Into the background, we're going to give you some background, some analysis, and then follow up with a summary. Again, the Ames Urban Fringe Plan was adopted July 2006. It included the cities of Gilbert, Ames, and Story County. The plan also drafted strategies for how to deal with annexations. It also included a 28E agreement that addresses how to deal with land use issues that come up with regard to building permits, development proposals, subdivisions, and annexations. The amendment was again initiated by the City of Ames to accommodate future industrial land development needs. In accordance with the plan, the land designated as planned industrial also allows it to be annexed by the city. Into the analysis, the City of Ames has explored or has been exploring the expansion of the industrial land to the east for several years. And then also through the efforts of the Ames Economic Development Commission, through their realization of the benefit of extending industrial uses along that Lincoln Highway corridor, has also contributed to the interest. The City of Ames City Council also had in one of their goals in 2014 to pursue industrial park opportunities. Recently, the Ames Economic Development Commission staff has been in contact with the property owners in that area where planned industrial would be designated, and they've determined that there is strong interest to annex voluntarily. And again, that's something that the city is interested in doing, hopefully this year. The proposed planned industrial area has been designated agricultural long-term industrial reserve since 2006, so 10 years. And so the vision for this area has changed to industrial use. The city, as Charlie mentioned, they've worked with the City of Nevada on the planning boundaries. They've also worked with the Central Iowa Water Association on water service rights. And again, they think that the time is good to take action to pursue this amendment and then eventual annexation. This area is attractive for large-scale industrial development due to its proximity to the freeway. Lincoln Highway, U.S. Highway 30, there's potential, depending on the outcome of that study, for another access off of 30, which could provide benefit for industrial development. You've got the interchange at 13th Street. As I mentioned before, most of these parcels are good-sized with single ownership. And again, you've got proximity to industrial development to the eastern area of Ames and the western area of Nevada. Expanding the agricultural long-term industrial reserve area has minimal impacts. Agriculture would remain the primary land use designation, and the existing A1 county zoning would remain.
So making more of this ground industrial reserve really doesn't impact it. What I mean is it there, Charlie? Maybe you can help me with this. To say in the distant future we're looking at something, or tell me what it's supposed to tell me.
The long-term industrial reserve designation is kind of in our middle tier of land use classes. We have rural service and ag conservation. The goal of that is to preserve it for agricultural uses. All subdivision review is part of only the county, regardless of how close it is to the City of Ames. The middle one is the rural service transitional area, rural-urban transitional area, and that is the area where we have joint subdivision review. The long-term industrial designation falls within that middle category. So while the zoning will most likely remain A1, it kind of reserves it and ensures that development doesn't occur, because it's the long-term plan post-2030 is for eventual industrial opportunities.
So it would shift the decision-making process on things that happen on this ground basically from the county to the city with this longer-term view of what it's going to become.
Well, it would still be joint city-county subdivision review and solely county jurisdiction on zoning.
Right.
But what it would do is ensure, as it does under the rural service and ag conservation, the county would not act on any zoning request that was inconsistent with the land use plan.
Okay.
But
Charlie and Jerry, again, for the benefit of the audience and so forth, you know, when we get a proposal of request for annexation, municipality wants to expand, it's really more or less a notification of this is the intent. We're asked to comment, basically. But we really, there's nothing in the code of the law that says that as a county we can say, well, no, you can't annex beyond what your current boundaries basically are. So part of the agreement, the land use agreement within the 2 mile fringe, brings about several long-term proposed concepts. In my tenure, there have been numerous opportunities or requests that we sat down and do more looking at the whole framework of land use. But as city councils change and now as boards of supervisors change, you know, you get different mindsets taking a look at, you know, these proposals. What I see here as an advantage is this is 10 years or so, which to me is a realistic time frame to think about the current structure that is currently in place and what is the long range potential, whether it's industrial, planned industrial, or the long-term industrial reserve. The whole idea is more of a combination of some type of industrial development centered in this region of the county, as Ames and Sterling County coexist. So help me just understand, make sure that the audience is aware that where annexation request comes in and the desire for a municipality to recommend or want changes to how that land may be used over a period of time.
The state code does not require cities to have a plan for the extraterritorial area of the city. You do have to have a comprehensive plan if you're going to apply zoning. The city does not extend zoning. We're not obligated to have a plan outside of our city limits. We have always, in our land use policy plan, kind of had an idea about where we wanted to go, but it was in 2006 when we created this multi-jurisdictional plan, Story County, City of Gilbert, and Ames, on areas that we expect cities to grow into. Gilbert is a part of that, and they've identified areas where they expect to grow. Areas where we think conservation of farmland is very important and we don't intend to grow. And then those areas that are adjacent to the city that expectation is that they will grow, the city will grow into them. In Ames, you know, we have residential growth identified north, northwest, and southwest. And we have a little bit of east industrial up on East 13th Street. The city of Ames, makes sure that if we're going to do an annexation, it's consistent with the plan. And we've amended the plan several times to accommodate residential growth. We're asking a change here for industrial growth. Once the plan changes, and if an annexation proceeds, then we pretty much follow state law, giving supervisors an opportunity and township trustees an opportunity to weigh in. You're right, there's not like a veto power or an opportunity other than just to provide input. And sometimes that input could be, well, you know, rather than annexing to the center line of a road, why don't you take the whole road, turn the whole maintenance over to the city, for instance. So sometimes we find that useful and can incorporate that in final decisions for the annexation. Under state law, if it's 100% annexed, if the territory is 100% annexing, I mean, 100% consenting ownership, then the City Development Board down in Des Moines gives great deference to the request of those property owners. If it's under the 80-20 rule, the City Development Board will give those people that are in opposition, meaning land area comprising no more than 20% of the total area, is a non-consenting owner. Then the City Development Board can have a public hearing to hear their concerns, They may make changes, but if the request is to, or if the inclusion of non-consenting owners is to avoid creating islands or to create more uniform boundaries for the provisions of services and so on, they will also give deference to the city on their action on the annexation. That's not to say that they will always allow an 80-20 annexation in its original form, but the City Development Board would have an opportunity to make changes and adjust boundaries. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Now, could I just, one other thought process, and I'm assuming, and I, maybe I shouldn't assume this, but in 2006, when the original plan, as you showed the map up there, were you around at that time?
I was not.
Okay. Can't really answer, and I know Leanne happened to be around, but I was just curious in terms of the vision that took place while plan industrial was listed, long-term industrial reserve was listed, but for some reason we kind of cornered it off a little bit, and I think you kind of had reference to the agricultural area there. It appears to me, as I look at this concept today from a long-term planning perspective, it makes a little sense. Because you're not having to come back as often to go through all the different hoops for various changes. But I was just kind of curious why back in those days that maybe we didn't think further out, because by squaring this off, you know, it looks a lot like the most ideal way to do it.
Yeah, but was that Wayne, I don't believe in 2006 anybody in the city of Ames would have suggested that ultimately 590th was going to be how far to the east. I think there was a vision that maybe someday Ames would get to 580th or just beyond, and I think that's what the map reflects. And the realities of Lincoln Way Energy and now DuPont combined, along with some other things, I think now have dictated that, no, that whole stretch right there makes sense. And then I'm with you. I think, you know, good government is a government that tries to plan what's coming in the future, and I think that's exactly what Ames is suggesting here, with no imminent impact to the people in the long-term industrial reserve. That's the sense I get anyway, Charlie, unless I'm seeing it differently.
That'd be correct. I think when the plan was, and I'm hearing this secondhand, in 2006, as the plan was being developed, the East 13th industrial area was going to piggyback on to, somebody mentioned previously, the proposed mall that was going to be there. It's going to be the mall that was going to bring the utilities to the east side of the interstate. Doing that, those utility lines just had limited capacity. They couldn't really go much beyond what that purple area on East 13th currently shows. So the City Council has, for a number of years, been looking at extending utilities to the east side of I-35 at Lincoln Highway. Initially, it was just to bring it to the east side of the interstate.
Right.
The cost of mobilization and the benefits of doing it all in one sitting, they have budgeted to take it all the way to 590th.
And that's in this upcoming year's budget for the City of Ames, right?
That's
it all the way to 590th. So clearly, City of Ames feels like this is imminent, the annexation. You're not going to deploy that infrastructure without annexing, right?
Well, it's the groundwork is being laid. We do not have an annexation petition in from anybody at this point. If this plan ultimately were to be changed, we would probably have meetings with property owners and start gauging interest in actually filling out applications. I know AEDC and city staff have met with some of the property owners, and they do indicate that there is interest of large property owners to do so. But that sewer and water infrastructure kind of reminds me to tell you why that 120 acres was taken out from the last time you saw this. The city had an agreement with Central Iowa Water Association to buy back those water rights as this area is developed. Those 120 acres were not a part of that agreement. They're still will be served by Central Iowa regardless of what happens. Now, everything else in that purple, we do have an agreement that allows property owners to maintain Central Iowa Water hookups, but as they develop or if they develop, then they would pay a fee to Central Iowa and become part of the Ames.
So anything new that's developed in the new purple area will go on City of Ames Utilities, but they'll pay Central Iowa for that privilege.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. With that, I'm going to open the public hearing. And we do have some slips from some people who would like to speak. First, he's actually got both of them down here. Is it Gene Johnson or last name is Johnson? I can't really name the first. There you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Come on back up to the desk if you want to speak to this this issue.
I like the map that shows what it currently is and what we're talking about going to, Jerry, if it doesn't make any difference to anybody else. That one there, yep. No, up one, yep, right there. Right, so on the right is what it currently is.
No, on the left is what
on the left is what it currently is. On the right is what we're proposing. Can we make that big so I can see it?
Actually, the next slide is the one that you're to take action on. It's the one after this.
Okay.
My name is Daryl Johnson. I'm the owner of this farm that's just south of the Kettleson Marsh. Part of my farm I've leased to the county for part of the marsh. I had to keep enough land when I bought the whole patch and split it. I had to keep enough land to meet county zoning for our agricultural. And this green streak here is actually that's my best quality farmland. I find both of these a little bit inconsistent with protection of the prairie and the marsh and its hunting with having industrial right next to it. Same problem with commercial to the south. All of this farmland is very high quality land, and it's a shame to bury it under concrete. It's really good farmland, except for a little spot east of the on 570th, it tends to be wet because the drainage isn't good. The city seems to like to grow outward as urban sprawl. However, there is much area along the railroad track that isn't developed in the city, doesn't have access either because you have to have a long siding to get rail access these days. That's why the city is going to gas partly. They haven't gotten a train load of coal in a long time. They had to truck it in because the UP doesn't like short sightings. But I think it's that this proposal is just overreaching. It's an Ames control grab of control, and I think that it should be rejected. Like both planning and zoning commissions have suggested.
Thank you.
Could I come and ask a one of my concerns, and you probably raised it, was the Kettleson Marsh, and while it seemed to butt right up next to it, there was some comments in here acknowledging the value of this area, and I know this would be important to the conservation board. The preservation of that particular area. So as you begin to look at planned industrial areas, hopefully depending upon companies that would want to come and be located, we would hope that the preference area would not necessarily be that this would be a prime location because of what I potentially could see would be somewhat problematic for the activities that go on in the marsh. And so if you could comment a little bit to this, and I certainly don't want to put Mike on the spot as our conservation director, but I certainly do know that our board and conservation people would be very concerned about development that would impact that particular area. And so hopefully, even though the outline says this area could at some point be used, that it would be a last resort.
Wayne, help me with this. So as I look at the map, the area immediately east of the Kelson Marsh is already planned to
exactly.
We're not talking about changing that, right?
Exactly. We're not talking about changing it.
All right.
And I think that's something that the city has tried to...
The likelihood of it developing and the order in which the planned industrial would develop is going to be based on willing landowners and the provision of utilities. And since the city is, at this point, initiating, or at least placed in its our annual budget, the money for utility to serve this area, this would probably be some point afterwards. The provision of utility is going to be quite difficult to get across the interstate, quite expensive. As far as protection of the marsh, when the mall was rezoned here, the city created a Northeast Gateway Overlay District that had specific protections for that area. Water runoff requirements, distance separation, lighting impacts, and so on. So we've that's governed that area that's already within the city limits. That type of zoning restrictions could be extended to the east on other property as it's annexed and subject to city zoning.
That was said at the city council by one of the city councilmen that they would be sure to have a setback across the 570th there to protect the marsh.
Well, just speaking for me, I would hope that that would be something that could truly be articulated and conveyed. I think that's important for us to protect that area.
Now, if I wanted to develop my land and protect the marsh to allow it still to be hunted, I only have a patch out of 36 acres of about 4 acres that I could develop without being closer than 600 feet to the marsh. We're very limited there already.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Next is Harold Ault.
Am I coming through on the microphone?
There's a little square right in front of you.
Oh, okay.
Yep, you're good.
First thing I'd like to say that should be noted that I think you're aware of, the Ames Zoning Commission, they held a meeting, and something I was appreciative of, they actually sent out mail notices by U.S. mail. They sent out notices to the people living in the area and anyone within 300 feet of the area. I don't live in the area, but I'm within 300 feet, so I did get a notice. The Ames Commission voted unanimously to deny the plan. And then the Ames City Council went ahead and adopted it. Despite the recommendation, unanimous recommendation to deny it. It went before the Story County Zoning Commission, and at that meeting there were only two people that spoke with comments on the plan. I was one, the other was Don Schumann. I guess I might see him here. There was not the large group of public there was at Ames. I think there had to be maybe as many as 30 people. There were only two speaking on the subject at Story County, but Story County didn't send out the notices by mail like Ames did. So the Ames Zoning Commission had... the Story County Zoning Commission had one abstention from voting, but otherwise it was also unanimous to deny the plan. So, starting with that, my comments on the plan, the north existing planned industrial to me made sense because it has access off of Interstate 35, and right now The eastern portion is lightly used compared to the western, which takes people into Ames. So anything requiring truck traffic, it would make sense that planned industrial be up there. There's a problem right now with the DOT wanting to close off Highway 30 access, and maybe there'll be access off of 600th Avenue going up to Lincoln Highway, but there's going to be a burden on the county to maintain roads to serve that industrial area up on Lincoln Highway, from which I don't think they get tax revenue. If the city of Ames expands its planned industrial or has industrial development, they're going to get the tax revenue, but Story County might have the burden of maintaining the roads. And I would think the city of Ames should be working on getting an interchange off of Interstate 35 to Lincoln Highway if that's where they want the development to occur. The proposed plan looks to me like the area to the north planned industrial is being abandoned. And it's primarily, from the way it looks to me, it appears it's because City of Ames is going to spend money to put in water and sewer. They won't serve electrical in the area, I don't think, because I think that's not in the Ames electrical territory. I'm not sure, but I don't think it is. But they're going to spend money up there, but they're not willing to spend money to the north. And I know what Ames would say to a developer if a developer said he didn't want to do something according to a plan because it's going to cost money. I don't think he would always get very much sympathy from the city. They would say, if you want to develop, here's what you need to do. So I think the city needs to be willing to spend the money on that area to the north as well as to the south. So the other thing to consider is the residents living in the area and the impact on them. And I know several of the residents do not think it would be a favorable impact. And I don't understand the annexation process. I have to get educated on it. But if it's voluntary annexation, that would be much more acceptable, I think, to the people in the area, rather than if that whole planned area was subject to an annexation vote and annexed in, because I think there are some things they might be doing there that they couldn't do under the City of Ames. I think their taxes would go higher, for one thing, but taking something simple like raising chickens, if they weren't already doing it, that would be a new use maybe not permitted by the City of Ames. Or if they had horses, City of Ames wouldn't permit that. So if they weren't already doing it, I don't know if they would be able to do it in the future. But what I would suggest is what's driving it, as it appears to me, is access to the railroad. The existing industrial up there, I think most of those have access to the railroad. So I would propose that the planned industrial be the area, the new planned industrial, be the area north of Lincoln Highway, south of the railroad tracks, and I would also suggest that there be a new designation other than planned industrial that would identify it as needing access to the railroad. I think it would be a waste of the land to give it to industrial that didn't require railroad access. And at the other meeting, they did state, at the Ames meeting on the subject, they stated that the Union Pacific only wanted access from the south of the tracks and not the north. I don't know that that really rules out access to the north, but the Union Pacific preferred it to the south. So I would suggest only the area north of a new plan, north of Lincoln Highway, south of the railroad tracks, that be planned industrial with railroad access, and the area south of that all be industrial reserve, and that also tips people off that some of it is industrial reserve now, but it tips people off of what the plan is for the future. And I think it's a big change to people in the area to go from agricultural industrial reserve to planned industrial. And the other problem with changing the plan, now it's almost the famous slam dunk. If somebody wants to change the zoning from agricultural to planned industrial, if that's what the plan says, it's almost a given that's what's going to be granted. I'll look, I have to just look at my notes, see if I left anything. Oh, yes. I don't know if the county in their agreement could require it, but if they could require that any annexation be voluntary, I think that would be something the people in the area would like. The other is the C2C plan. I think some people aren't aware how the process is working, because going on right now is the C2C plan, but this Ames Fringe plan is outside the C2C plan. It's actually independent, I believe, of the C2C. So some people might think by going to the C2C plan, they're seeing everything that's happening, but that really isn't the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Kent Cartwright.
You're fine, Ken. He'll be back in a minute.
Good afternoon. My name is Kent Hartwig. I'm a manager in corporate affairs with Renewable Energy Group. And Dan O, our CEO, has asked me to speak with you today in our support for this amended urban fringe plan. REG is the North American leader in biodiesel production, and we have over 230 employees at two locations on the eastern side of Ames. As I just said, we are located on the eastern portion of Ames, and we're very near to where this proposed amendment will occur. And we see this amendment as a positive step forward in the city's growth and our ability to grow as an industry here as well. REG is committed to this community, and we have forged a strong relationship with the university and other central Iowa industries. We are growing and diversifying our business so not to only be focused on biodiesel, but into renewable chemicals and other renewable products. And this is evident in our announcement last Friday that we're expanding our lab to include fermentation processes, which is an extension of our research and development from South San Francisco and REG Life Sciences. We see the potential of this amendment as an opportunity for our business as we grow and expand, hopefully here in Central Iowa. Specifically, this amendment secures long-term growth for Ames and is a natural progression of the biotechnology economy here. We see this as a greater opportunity for good-paying technical careers in a thriving bioprocessing corridor that contributes exponentially to the Ames area and Story County. Thank you, and I hope you'll support the amendment.
Thank you.
Donald Schumann.
My name is Donald Schumann. I live at 3209 Jules Circle, Ames. That's down in the southeast part of Ames. I'm concerned about what's going to happen to the people that live in their houses, their homes, in this big area. Many of them have been there for many, many years. If, depending on what kind of development takes place, they may be forced out of their homes because they don't have what I call environmentally friendly neighbors because of the type of plants development that may take place. I realize progress results in some people benefiting and being happy, but it also causes a lot of stress on people that are already there and have been for years that have to then find someplace else to go to live. But that is progress. I realize that, unfortunately. I have a big concern about the area that's north of the Union Pacific Railroad, east of Interstate 35, and bounded on the north by 13th Street. There's been no development there. Even though there's utilities, as I understand it, there are some of the utilities that already extend slightly east of I-35 along 13th Street. Now, I've been told that the reason, and I looked at this as an excuse, why that area north of the railroad tracks, bounded on the north by 13th Street, hasn't been developed is because there's no sidings for the railroad on the north side of the Union Pacific tracks. And that's true. There are no sidings. Union Pacific Railroad is hurting big time. They've lost a lot of business. This shipment of coal in the last 18 months has been decreased by nearly 25%. The shipment of containers on these container trains has gone down like 15%. Union Pacific are looking. They're looking for good customers. And I suspect that if something were to happen north of the tracks, with cooperation from cities, counties, the county, that they would be willing to put in and maintain some sidings, long sidings, like they have on the south side of the tracks. Biggest concern I have, though, is that it's what kind of development that the city of Ames, if they have the control over what develops, what kind of development we're going to have. Are we going to have a fertilizer manufacturing plant? Those of us that have been around those know that that's not the most friendly to the environment. Another plant, Mason City, is getting a new hog processing plant, a packing plant, south of Mason City. Those of us that have been around packing plants, even the more modern ones, know from the environmental concerns associated with those. The trucks that are carrying animals into the plants associated with manure that runs off the trucks. These are concerns that we all should be having about what happens with the City of Ames proposals. Now, if it's a good, clean environment, the plants or whatever it is, office buildings for industries, that's one thing. But there's a potential, the way I see it, of having plants, manufacturing plants, processing plants that are not really environmentally friendly. And do we want that kind of development in Ames area, Story County, Nevada? I appreciate the opportunity to speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Scott Lind.
I'll refer to that in a little bit. So I'm Scott Wendt, 59480 Lincoln Highway. I'm a half a mile to the east of the proposed planned industrial area. And I have a lot of neighbors along the highway that are in that area. I'm aware that at the first public meeting, they spoke out 10-1 against that. When the city brought this issue to the Planning and Zoning Commission, there was language in the document about a vast majority of the landowners favoring this. I didn't see how that fit with the 10-1 speaking out against it, so I asked some questions as to what the numbers were. I've done a count, and in the entire area, there's approximately 60 landowners, and there's approximately, I counted 37 homes. So I was wondering if the city can tell me, of the 37 or the 60, how many favor and how many oppose?
Charlie, do you have an answer?
I did not personally talk to those people out there. I know some have contacted me since the meeting expressing interest, but it was
And aren't the calculations, Charlie, done based on number of acres? Not so you're not doing it based on, you know, 30 of the 60 landowners or 430 or against. It's based on how much land each one owns, and that's the percentage of the
land. The gentleman pointed that out at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. I did reword it.
Charlie, can you come closer so we can get you on the microphone?